we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Wikipedia co-founder says the site is badly biased. Facebook knew its algos sowed divisiveness and execs ignored it. Twitter ignites mega gigantic shitstorm after fact-checking Trump tweets. And YouTube removes Michael Moore's Planet of the Humans. This and more in Access of Easy number 148. Hey everybody, Mark Jeftovic here with another edition of Access of Easy. We are recording this on, what day is it, June 2nd, and the show notes for this week's edition will be at accessofeasy.com/148. Let's do the quotes. Last week's quote was, if privacy is outlawed, only outlaws will have privacy. That was Phil Zimmerman, the creator of PGP, pretty good privacy encryption. And PHS3 got there first. A few of you got it, thankfully. And this week's quote is, uncertainty is an uncomfortable position, but certainty is an absurd one. Remember the rules, no searching this up online, and the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes page gets their next domain or web hosting renewal on us. Okay, so YouTube removed Michael Moore's Planet of the Humans film. Remember where you read it first? So just a few weeks ago, we wrote up the new Michael Moore film, Planet of the Humans, and it had hit a nerve with the clean energy crew so much that certain factions within it were organizing to have the movie deplatformed. And at the time that that happened, I downloaded a copy of it and put it up on Access of Easy, and I wrote, you know, just in case YouTube obliges them. I didn't really think YouTube would. I mean, we're talking Michael Moore here. But they did take the film down. They're calling it a copyright complaint from a photographer whose footage was used in the film for approximately 4.5 seconds. He disagrees with the framing of the film and he doesn't want his material in it. The Michael Moore team is stating that this falls well within fair use and that it's not a problem, but there you have it. And so Matt Taibbi has written an excellent assessment of this situation, and what's probably going to happen now is Moore's team is going to recut the film without the offending footage, and we'll see what YouTube says next time it's online on the platform. Another YouTube story, their algos automatically delete comments insulting to the Chinese Communist Party. So reports started emerging elsewhere on social media that YouTube was automatically deleting comments that contained two phrases that were insulting to China's ruling Communist Party. Quote, comments left under videos or in live streams that contain the words Communist Bandit or 50 Cent Party are automatically deleted in around 15 seconds, though their English language translations and romanized pinyin equivalents are not. End quote. So this has been going on for nearly 6 months, but when it finally came to light and was pressed on the matter, YouTube's parent Alphabet said that the phrases had mistakenly been added to the system's comment profanity filters and devs were working on a fix. I guess the fix would be to just simply remove a couple strings out of a database or a list, but apparently it takes a team of devs to work on that for a while. YouTube is blaming the algos, but I came across another tweet, which we'll link to in the show notes page, and somebody there was complaining that YouTube deleted every comment he ever made over time in the past about China's propaganda division, Wumeo. TikTok blocks George Floyd tag across system also blames bug. So news started spreading via Twitter on Thursday night that TikTok was blocking the hashtags Black Lives Matter and George Floyd across the system. The company responded on social media that it was not intentional and a software bug was affecting random hashtags across the system, including hashtag cat and hello. Although it is kind of weird that a random bug would grab two fairly tightly coupled hashtags at that moment in time. Anyway, by the weekend, some posts to TikTok referencing those tags were garnering hundreds of thousands of views, so it appears to have resolved the situation. We don't own our digital goods and why it matters. So this came in via a reader who has sent me stuff in the past. I think he likes to keep his name out of it, so I'll leave it out of it. He sent me an article that examines how even after you purchase a digital download from an online store, you don't actually own it forever the way we're accustomed to thinking about things we buy. In this case, it's Amazon's Prime, which has been sued by at least one customer who found that a movie purchased a few years ago, in that case it was Alita Battle Angel, had been removed and was no longer downloadable or viewable. Prime's terms of service allow them to do it because the fine print, in addition to severely limiting your rights to purchase content, also stipulates that it is not liable if purchased digital content becomes unavailable for further download or streaming. And Amazon's not alone in doing this. Apple's iTunes sometimes pulls movies out of the library for whatever reason, and if you own that movie and you didn't download it, that's tough luck. And I once discovered further that if your payment method in the iTunes store stops working, like your credit card expires, then you cannot access any of your purchased content in the store until you fix your payment method. It even applies to everything you've already bought and paid for. And I once tweeted to this effect, and I got some pushback from the Apple fanboys saying, you know, in effect, surely you must be mistaken, or you're probably an idiot, or possibly both. But I have since confirmed this more than once with Apple reps when I've been on the phone with them on other support issues. Twitter ignites mega gigantic storm after fact-checking Trump tweets. A couple weeks ago, Twitter announced that they would start labeling potentially misleading tweets about coronavirus. We didn't run that story specifically, but we've said more than once that doing so is easier said than done because some of the worst and most inaccurate and plain wrong information has come out of official sources such as the World Health Organization and the CDC, and a social media network deigning to sort it all out and deduce what is true and what is not seems a tad grandiose to me. Anyway, last week, Twitter took things to a whole new level by adding a similar fact-checking label to the U.S. president's tweets. And Trump predictably went completely ballistic, and it culminated in an executive order intended to pave the way towards stripping social media platforms of their immunity from liability arising from content posted on their systems. So if we take the emotion out of this, a lot of people positively loathe Trump. I positively loathe Twitter. So if we try and take a step back from that, it really does seem as if Twitter stepped into a self-made booby trap to some extent, because I've been in the internet infrastructure business since the mid-90s. And the one thing we're always cognizant of and tried to diligently avoid was exercising editorial influence on content traversing our systems, because the risk that we were always hammered on by lawyers who were in the vicinity, they always said, if you start exercising editorial control over some of the content traversing your system, you're going to become responsible for all of it. So you want to remain positioned as a mechanical distributor, not as a publisher. And it seems like Twitter has done exactly the opposite now. Now, it looks like the rest of big tech is not completely in harmony with Twitter's actions. Mark Zuckerberg opined that Twitter shouldn't have done that, and he slammed the move. And I think, you know, Facebook does similar stuff themselves. So I think Zuck is primarily motivated by wanting to just distance himself from Twitter over all of this. But as I state in my book, Unassailable, trying to moderate content via so-called fact-checking or based on behavior from outside of the platform, it's a fool's errand. Don't try to do this. Another Twitter story, they unverified a journalist after covering Obama-era spying on reporters. So a journalist wrote a column on a site called Mediate.com about Cheryl Atkison. She's a former CBS reporter. She also wrote a book called The Smear. It's an excellent book. I have it. It's about political operatives and media manipulation. Highly recommend it. But this column was written by August Takala, and he tells the story on how Atkison figured out that she had been illegally surveilled by Obama-era intelligence officials. And that's an ongoing scandal currently unfolding, although it's being ignored by most mainstream media. It's called Obamagate. But within 1 hour of Takala tweeting about this new column on Twitter, his hollowed blue checkmark designating him as a verified account was removed. Facebook knew its algo sowed divisiveness and execs ignored it. If anybody remembers a couple of years ago, I thought it was last year, but it turned out it was 2018, we wrote a comprehensive review of Jaron Lanier's 10 Reasons to Delete Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. It was an excellent deep dive into the ways social media platforms bring out our worst attributes and sow divisiveness. And it turns out that Facebook execs knew all this. They knew a lot of this about their own platform. They were warned by their own staff and they chose to ignore it because, you know, divisiveness drives page clicks or page views. Page views drive ad revenues. So from the article, quote, "Our algorithms exploit the human brain's attraction to divisiveness. Read a slide from the 2018 presentation. If left unchecked, it warned, Facebook would feed users more and more divisive content in an effort to gain user attention and increase time on platform," end quote. So the study was initially encouraged by Mark Zuckerberg, who was worried about the platform's effect on polarization, but then he lost interest in it and moved on to other things, according to the Wall Street Journal, and other senior executives then weakened or blocked efforts to reform Facebook's system based on the findings. Here's a deep dive into future technologies that will shape the internet. It's a decent cheat sheet on what technologies are worth paying attention to in the future. It's an article called Emerging Communications Technologies over on Circle ID by Jeff Huston. You should print it off and tape it to your fridge. It helps you discern which technologies you can safely ignore despite the hype. He talks about 5G, inevitably. He doesn't come out and say ignore 5G, but he does say that it appears to be more hype than actual evolution of the communications technology, and that 5G isn't really much different than 4G. And I tell people this a lot, especially the ones who are really concerned about 5G conspiracy or, you know, Luciferic plot kind of people. If you're not worried about 4G, which is already everywhere, then you shouldn't be worried about 5G. Also, former CRTC commissioner and erstwhile director to CIRA, Tim Denton, who was on the board the same time I was, he followed up with a pretty dispassionate look at 5G on his blog, so we link to that as well. Wikipedia co-founder says the site is badly biased. So that's Larry Sanger. He's the guy who came up with the moniker Wikipedia, and he wrote most of the original governance policy for Wikipedia, says the NPOV is dead, which is the neutral point of view. It's a belief among Wikipedia editors that they're rationally and dispassionately editorializing content and moderating edits in a neutral, unbiased manner. Sanger says they're not. Quote, "The point is that true neutrality, to be carefully distinguished from objectivity, requires that the article be written in a way that makes it impossible to determine the editor's position on the important controversies the article touches on," end quote. And he lists tons of examples where that is clearly not the case, where subjective opinions are blatantly expressed in the article's own voice, and where wide-ranging pronouncements are made without attribution or qualification. Sanger concludes with, quote, "It's time for Wikipedia to come clean and admit that it has abandoned the NPOV, neutrality as a policy, At the very least, they should admit that they have redefined the term in a way that makes it utterly incompatible with its original notion of neutrality, end quote. He further suggests that if they really feel the need to editorialize or skew the material, then they should publicly shift their focus away from neutrality and try to lay some claim to credibility instead. And personally, I think that would be deeply problematic, in my opinion, because people already think that Wikipedia is credible. What's in Wikipedia is credible, and what they say about other things is a credible voice, and it's not. It's a biased voice, time and time again. Local news stations run stories scripted by Amazon. So, speaking of neutral, unbiased reporting, you know, thankfully we still have network news, right? So maybe you were one of the viewers who caught a story on one of 11 local TV stations throughout the U.S. who reported on how Amazon is dealing with the stress and pressure of safely delivering essential goods to households while keeping everybody safe and healthy amid a global pandemic. Todd Walker takes us inside. Well, Walker seems to be a busy guy since all 11 stations called on their man on the ground, Todd, to go in and report on how these Amazon fulfillment centers keep it all together. Turns out Todd Walker isn't actually a reporter working for any of these TV stations. He's a PR manager at Amazon. The entire piece is scripted. It's not even an infomercial or an advertorial as much as it's a piece of propaganda touting the company's store. All 11 stations delivered the same segment preamble word for word, and none of them disclosed it as such when the segment ran. And this is not new, okay? Back in 2013, there was a short film contest called Operation Paul Revere. It was actually put on by InfoWars, okay? Yes, that InfoWars. But the winning entry was called Political Earth. It was absolutely hysterical and brilliant, which is how I even became aware of any of this. But a runner-up was called Media Brainwashing, linking to it in the show notes. It's a montage of local TV news anchors all reciting news stories verbatim in exactly the same manner outlined above. Clip after clip of these plastic-looking dolls using that horribly patronizing newscaster vocal timbre repeating the exact same words from station to station. Okay, GitLab runs phishing tests against employees and 20% fall for it. Phishing, it's a problem everywhere, even in cutting-edge tech outfits. SiliconANGLE reported that in a test GitLab ran against 50 of their employees, they sent them an email with a link to a counterfeit company website. Only 17 of the 50 clicked on the link, but out of those 17, 10 entered their login credentials. The test didn't take into account things like multi-factor authentication, which can save your bacon in a situation like this. Remember, every easy DNS account has two-factor authentication. Just go into your security settings and turn it on. Anyway, on a similar note, by the way, last week the University of Waterloo also ran a simulated phishing attack against their student body using TypoSquat domains registered via easy DNS. And an alert student called us out on Twitter. We nuked the account. Next day, I'm on the phone with UAW's head of security, and, you know, hilarity ensued. So the moral of that story is if you're going to run a phishing simulation against your own organization and register the domains here, please let us know via support that you're doing so we don't nuke the account once the emails start flying. Okay, over on the Access of Easy, the podcast that Charles Hugh Smith, Jesse Hirsch, and I did last week was called The Hanseatic League of Decentralized Crypto States. It was our salon number 6, and we continued on a theme of what comes next after the loss of institutional legitimacy. Nation states aren't going away anytime soon, but they will have to share the stage with some non-state actors sooner than they may expect. But some of those actors may be Facebook and Google and Amazon, so they could pose even greater threats to personal autonomy and freedom. But there's also alternatives, so it's a good conversation. You might want to check it out. We also had a request to make transcripts available of these Access of Easy salons, so we're doing that. We record the salons on Thursday. I usually get them up Thursday night, and the transcripts usually get finished by Monday. And so that's when they're going to go up. One last housekeeping thing. Remember the Kill BTLR petition that we lodged in the House of Commons to get the Trudeau government to step back from the recommendations of the BTLR, the Broadband Telecom Legislative Review. That's that horrible set of recommendations that would include things like requiring you to get a license from the state before you can start a blog, or we would have to get a license to put out this newsletter. We'd have to get a license to do Access of Easy. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, the petition signing period ends on Friday, June 5th. We only really got 3,500 signatures, which is pretty disappointing in my mind. It means only 3,500 of us really care about freedom of speech and really are worried about government overreach. And especially as coronavirus broke loose and took hold of the world, and we saw this vendetta against so-called misinformation, I think people should be more alert to this danger, and they seem to be less alert, and so no one's going to care, and we'll see how it all plays out. But we got one last push here. If you can mobilize yourself and maybe a couple hundred thousand of your friends to sign this petition, then head over to killbtlr.ca and get it done. Thanks. That's it. Stay sane. Stay safe. We'll see you next week. That's family good.